Today I'm going to be speaking to you about the Magdalen Laundries. And Joni Mitchell, the Canadian folk singer, has written a song about it, and so I'm going to let her introduce the topic.
Just turned 27 when they sent me to her sisters for the way men looked at me. Branded as a Jezebel, I knew I was not bound for heaven. I'd be cast in shame into the Magdalen pregnant, some by their own fathers. Bridget got the belly by her parish priest. We're trying to get things white as snow. All of us will be cotton daddies in the steaming stains of the Magdalen boundaries. Jesus, if they just once glimpse their room, then they'd know. And then got the stones concealed behind their rosaries. They look the grass they walk upon, they leech the light out of a room. They'd like to drive us down the drain at the Magdalen boundaries. A flirt, they just stuffed her in a hole. Surely the lad, you'd think at least some bell should ring. One day I'm gonna die here too, and then you plant me in the dirt. Some lay mob that never blooms, come any spring, not any spring.
Asylums were institutions created to house and rehabilitate so-called fallen women and operated mostly in Europe from the 18th century until the late 20th century. They were given this name after Mary Magdalene from the Bible, who in medieval times was thought to have been a prostitute. In Ireland, these institutions were called the Magdalen Laundries, and young girls and women were incarcerated there for a variety of reasons. As an alternative to prison, because of pregnancy, fleeing an abusive husband, or because they had no family to take care of them. 2,500 girls and women lived in the laundries between 1922 in 1996. The average stay was 6 months, but those without families to take care of them could stay much longer. Some survivors continued to live with the nuns even after the laundries had closed. Some died there. The conditions of the laundries seem to have been nothing short of brutal. Sometimes inadequate food, long hours of hard physical labor, accompanied by hours of forced prayer and no conversation. The nuns themselves have described the laundries as places of charity, where women who had no place else to go were taken care of, and their labors paid their keep. But where was the true idea of rehabilitation? The women were not educated or counseled, or in any way given the resources they needed to live independently. The singer Sinead O'Connor is possibly the most famous of the Magdalens, sent for 18 months after she was caught shoplifting, and she told the Irish Times the following: "We were girls in there, not women, just children, really. Moreover, the girls in there cried every day. It was a prison. We didn't see our families. We were locked in, cut off from life, deprived of a normal childhood. We were told we were there because we were bad people. Some of the girls had been raped at home and not believed. One girl was in because she had a bad hip and her family didn't know what to do with her. It was a great grief to us." When Philomena Lee was a teenager living in Ireland in the 1950s, she committed the then unforgivable sin of getting pregnant out of wedlock. She was disowned by her father, and so she had to go to live in a laundry where she gave birth to a son, Anthony. She worked in the laundries and helped raise Anthony. And one day, when he was 3 years old, an American Catholic family came and bought Anthony from the Sisters of Shawnross Abbey. Last year, a film was released called Philomena. Directed by Stephen Frears and starring Judy Dench and Steve Coogan, it tells the story of Philomena Lee working in the laundries and of her heartbreak as she watched little Anthony drive off with the people who would raise him. For 50 years, Philomena kept Anthony a secret. When she finally unburdened herself of her undeserved shame so that she might find her son, her daughter sought out the help of a journalist by the name of Martin Sixsmith. What follows is a story that you would think only Hollywood could write, and I'm not going to tell the story here because I hope that you will all watch this film, which portrays one of the most amazing true stories of an otherwise unremarkable Irish woman. What I am going to share, however, is the moment in the film that inspired me. You need to know that the nuns were not helpful to Philomena in her search for her son. They put up roadblocks to a joyful reunion at every turn. They hid their own shameful secret, that they had profited not only from the labors of marginalized young women, but from the sale of children who were sent to America without even giving them the chance to kiss their mothers goodbye. Now, the film has the Hollywood trope of the sadistic nun, and it's possible there were some nuns in Shawnross Abbey who might fit the bill, but the truth is that the laundries were not the creation of a group of evil nuns. They were created because society shunned girls like Philomena. She was disowned by her own father. Her religion taught her that her soul was in mortal danger. Philomena had more to hate than just Sister Hildegard McNulty. At a time when she needed society's help the most, when she was unmarried, pregnant, and still just a child herself, she was shunned and hidden and robbed of her baby. So when the film portrays Philomena and the journalist confronting the cruel, unrepentant Sister Hildegard, we know that they are confronting the entire Catholic Church and all of Irish society. And remarkably, Philomena turns to the old nun and softly says, "I forgive you." Martin Sixsmith later challenges Philomena, "How can she forgive so easily? What, just like that?" he sputters. "It's not just like that," she replies. "That was hard for me." But she lets Sixsmith know that she doesn't want to be consumed with anger like he is. "That must be exhausting," she says. The bewilderment of Sixsmith combined with the grace and dignity of Philomena make for a moment of great cinematic beauty, and it portrays the inner struggle we all have as we harbor resentments, both petty and significant, and as we strive for the peace that forgiveness can bring us. The real-life Philomena told reporters, "It was a long time ago when this all happened. In the beginning, I was quite upset and unforgiving about everything. I was very hurt and very sad, and I did lose my religion a little bit. But I couldn't hold a grudge all these years. I have forgiven everyone. After leaving the convent laundry, she became a nurse. She sank her own hurt into her work with others and rediscovered her faith. The lesson of Philomena for me is that it is not a sign of weakness to forgive those who have done the unforgivable. It does not mean that you are okay with what has been done to you, or that you are even reconciled to those who have hurt you. But the Buddha said, holding on to anger is like grasping a hot coal with the intent of throwing it at someone else. You are the one getting burned. Forgiveness is a gift you give yourself. By freeing yourself from the emotional ties to the past, and by refusing to continue to live in a prison of your own making. This is not to say that there is not room in this story for the justifiable outrage of Martin Sixsmith, which, by the way, was fictionalized for the film. Sixsmith is actually a very laid-back, world-weary reporter who wasn't fazed by the Hildegards of the world. But the writer needed to portray our outrage in the character of Sixsmith, because outrage at the way women were treated in Ireland in the 20th century is justifiable and must never be repeated. But I know that the only way to go forward from injustice is not to allow yourself to be consumed by its poison. Martin Luther King Jr. stated that forgiveness is not an occasional act, it's a constant attitude. Philomena Lee is, both in this film and in life, a beautiful spirit who demonstrates the power of having an open, loving heart. Philomena met Pope Francis in February, saying with humor, "Those nuns would be so jealous now."
Thank you, Nancy. And now I'd like to invite Dennis to come forward and share his inspiration from the opera.
When I was 8 years old, my much older sister took me to my first opera. And I have been an enthusiast for opera ever since. So that when I was asked to make this contribution about how opera might have helped in my spiritual development, I had a long operatic road down which to look. And when I looked down that road, I found two experiences that really gleamed out at me, asking for attention. The first one was from an opera very seldom performed, really. It's called The Pearl Fishers by Georges Bizet. I've only seen it once. But there is within that opera that great rarity in the world of music, a male duet. Some of you must have heard the male duet from The Pearl Fishers. I know I've heard it a number of times. First of all, of course, in the opera. Now, I do not remember the story of the pearl fishers, and I don't really know what these two young men are singing about. It has no intellectual impact upon me at all. But the music, oh, the music of that duet, I can go to sleep at night having it going through my head. I don't know what inspired Bizet to write that beautiful duet sung by two young men. So it's entirely, as I said, non-intellectual. It is just the emotional impact of that music which lifts me up and away. It really does. How's this microphone doing? Now the other experience, which I've had many times, is in an opera by Puccini called La Bohème. Now many of you are much more familiar with La Bohème And you know that in that, the scene I'm talking about takes place in Paris in the depth of winter. And a young lady has dropped her key as she is attempting to open her door. And a young man, who she knows a little, comes by and she asks him to help her find this key. And while he's down there on the floor looking for the key with her, his hand touches hers. And he sings one of the most beautiful arias in the world of music. In English, I think it comes to, "Your tiny hand is frozen. Let me warm it into life." Now, I have seen that opera umpteen times as I've gone through life. It is only in the last 10 or 15 years that the emotional impact of that aria has come to me. And I think, if I am put into this world for any purpose, I would like to think that perhaps it is that I may encounter a little hand that is frozen, and that I may warm it into life.
I'd like to invite Jean Donaldson now to come and share her inspiration from book and movie, I believe.
As I take it, you mean to be. Tell me the first token that passed between you and me.
Talk about both a short story and a film that was made from it. The story is The Dead, written by James Joyce, and the film was directed by John Huston. In Joyce's short story collection, Dubliners, The Dead is the final story. The setting is year 1904, winter, a traditional party in an upper-class townhouse, dancing and late holiday feast for family, friends, and young music students. The hosts are two elderly sisters and their niece, all music teachers and gentle women concerned with manners and formality. Aunt Julia is tall and frail. Aunt Kate is jovial, plump. Neither has married. They have a self-centered, complaining, widowed sister whose son Freddie is likely soon to arrive, somewhat stewed. There is much fuss about this. We come to realize that all the family members may have routines,
but none of them and none of the older guests has a romantic or marital attachment. All have accepted dutiful, perhaps troubled lives. It is snowing heavily when nephew Gabriel and his wife Greta arrive. They are a contrast to the other guests in the family. Greta is charming, warm, gracious. Gabriel is self-contained, observant, less talkative. They are a handsome, middle-aged couple. Gabriel is immediately assigned duties. Dance with this person. Pay attention to Freddie's mother. Keep Freddie in line. Carve the goose and give the after-dinner speech. He is ruminating about how and what he should say, questioning his ability to do it at all. Gabriel's persona and his spirit are miles apart. Joyce portrayed many Irish men as meek, without spirit, like his general view of an Ireland still ruled by Britain. He knew Irish songs and used these to symbolic and sometimes ironic effect. At the party, a young tenor, Mr. Darcy, would sing, but he has a cold. Frail Aunt Julia is prevailed to sing. She chooses a coloratura favorite titled Arrayed for the Bridal, meaning. A recitation by the schoolmaster is about broken vows. There's strange undercurrents to these choices. Joyce's characters harbor many layers, and Huston's film portrays these richly with added visual effect, providing a deeply moving journey. Much later, during the dinner for family and older guests, the conversation is mostly nostalgia, reminiscences of opera performers over from the continent. Oh, the Italian tenors. Names and